Oh, this looks so very normal, Latimer. A semi-detached house in a cul-de-sac in a small Cornish town. When I said that I wanted the next tea there to be safe, it appears you really listened.
I always listen, Mum.
Are we going to take tea in the living room?
No, Mum. Living rooms are well known for their perilous flying ducks. We shall be taking tea in the conservatory. Nowhere is safer than a room made entirely of glass.
Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't been too distracted by your Idris Elba James Bond fantasies. I must say I've been enjoying mine immensely. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. Well, this conservatory couldn't be more average, even down to the cane furniture and ineffectual blinds. It might not be the most exotic of tea lair locations, but it's nice not having to worry about the possibility of sandworms or sea monsters. There are plenty of chairs, and a few beanbags too, for the more adventurous amongst you, so do make yourselves comfortable.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived. A Mr. Taran Matharu.
Oh, splendid. Let's see his calling card. Taran Matharu, Esquire. Word wrangler and teller of tall tales. Oh, and look, there's a little salamander motif. That's adorable. Latimer, just before my guest arrives, can I just check that none of the plants in the garden are poisonous?
Not to my knowledge, ma'am.
And none of them come to life or eat people?
Not to my knowledge, ma'am.
And he'll be coming through the garden gate over there? There are no hidden pits in the path or Cornish giants ready to pounce on him after we've taken tea?
Not to my knowledge, ma'am.
Good. Because if there is the slightest hint of peril, mild or otherwise, that's it.
That's what, ma'am?
The end. No more. So are you absolutely sure that Taran will be safe when he comes to visit?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sure he will enjoy his visit.
Well, he'd better. Send him in, Latimer. For those of you who don't know, Taran Matharu is an author whose fantasy novel, The Novice, began its life on the writing website Wattpad, where it achieved 6 million reads. The Novice is book one in the Summoner series, and has recently been published by Macmillan Children's Books.
Mr. Taran Matharu, ma'am.
Hello, Taran. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Do come and sit down. Would you like some tea?
Yes, please.
How do you take your tea?
Two sugars and a splash of milk, please.
Two sugars and a splash of milk it is. And I was wondering if you would like a slice of Danish dream cake to go with it.
Wow. Yeah, it looks amazing, actually. I'd definitely like a slice.
Yes, I've never had this one before. It's just a normal sponge cake, but it has this amazing topping of coconut and caramelised brown sugar that makes it kind of like a little gentle crust. It's ooh, lovely.
Yeah.
So here's a slice. And don't mind the chickens over there. They won't bother you. We've put them in the pen so that they don't go and chew the carpet or the rugs in the living room over there. You're not allergic to feathers, are you?
Actually, I am a little bit. So I might be a little bit sniffly today.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, let's just make sure that you're sitting as far away from them as possible.
Absolutely.
So, in my invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
So I've brought along this sword here. It's an Egyptian kopesh. Which the protagonist in my book uses as his primary weapon.
Ah.
So as you can see here, it's looks like a normal sword in at the start. It's got a hilt and everything, and I mean, it starts off normally, but I really like the shape of the curve, so it curves like a sickle at the end.
Yes, it's beautiful.
And the reason why it's designed that way is so that the person who's using it can catch another sword in the crook of the curve at the top and then use that to kind of hook someone's shield perhaps, or maneuver the other person's sword around, and I just think it's very cool, so I thought I'd bring one along.
Yes, and it's actually really aesthetically beautiful as well as massively violent, which is always a good thing,
yes.
I think.
Yes, that's very true.
So you mentioned the protagonist, and that's of Summoner the Novice, presumably.
That's right, yes.
Now, I understand that you put the book onto Wattpad a little section at a time.
Absolutely, yeah.
As a writer, I'm really fascinated by this because putting each section up onto Wattpad means that you would have got immediate feedback from people out there in the public sphere. Were you writing it and posting it as you went along, or did you write it in advance and then post it up in chunks later?
I was writing it and posting it simultaneously. I would literally give it a read through and then pretty much immediately post it online as soon as I'd finished. So there was very little kind of editing time. So I was very lucky that my girlfriend was able to kind of read through it for me when my brain was kind of had been turned to mush from pounding out these words. So that was really useful. And also the readers weren't afraid to point out any typos when there were some. So I almost had a team copy editing it for me online, which was really cool as well.
Yeah. So I find that fascinating because one of the things I wonder about is with getting immediate feedback during the process of writing the book, do you feel that that helped your creative process or hindered it?
I think it definitely helped. I do miss, because I've just finished writing the second book, and I did miss my fans and the feedback as I was writing it. You know, there's several key things that make it special. I wouldn't say that necessarily the advice that you get is useful, because, for example, there's a scene where the main character is deemed to be not as powerful as the antagonist in the book. And lots of people are like, no, you need to make him super powerful, make him level 100 instead of, you know, level 9. And the fact is, the book would be very boring if he was super powerful and was, you know, much more powerful than everyone who wanted to beat him. So, you know, sometimes people don't necessarily know what they want. I'm sure people who watch Game of Thrones won't want, you know, so many characters dying off, but it makes the show a lot less interesting if everything's perfect. So I'd say in some respects, the not useful, but in other ways, sometimes they'll identify a character that they want to see more of, or they want to see more of this part of the story. And that really helps you kind of focus in on, okay, this is what people are enjoying, this is what they like, and that's really cool. Probably the most important part of getting this instant feedback is just the encouragement. You know, you're putting these chapters up and you don't know if they're any good, and, you know, it's a very solitary experience when you're writing usually, but it becomes a lot more sociable, and suddenly you're putting something up and people are like, this is great, when's the next chapter up? Oh, I can't wait to read it. And it really just kind of pulls you along, and you can't wait to get back home and write it, as opposed to, like, you know, you don't, no one's waiting for it, so you can, oh, I could probably start writing tomorrow, and you procrastinate, and it's just a very different experience.
It is very different. Have you found, because I'm very interested by the fact that you've just finished the second book effectively in your own little kind of privacy bubble.
Yeah.
Is there an advantage that you found to that different technique? Are there some aspects of having that privacy that you've enjoyed?
Yes, definitely. So with book one, at least for the Wattpad version, it was, you know, if I did something that I perhaps wanted to change, I wouldn't be able to because everyone's already read that chapter. So if I wanted to change a character's name, or perhaps I wanted to make a scene a little different, or add a subplot, or add something to that had already been written and posted, I wouldn't really be able to.
Mm.
I can't tell everyone, hey, everyone, go back and reread chapter 3 because I've changed this. It just doesn't work. And it makes things it ruins the reading experience if people are reading it and then there's a little note at the bottom saying, oh, by the way, this character's name is Jim now instead of Frank, whatever.
Yep.
So that is one aspect. But obviously when the book was picked up by all the different publishers and I worked with my editors, you know, it was fine. I could go back and change whatever I liked, but it was just a little bit frustrating sometimes. You know, you can't necessarily change things on the fly. So with book two, I've been able to be a bit more reflective and a lot more flexible with my writing, where if I want to add something or change something, I can just go back and change it. But at the same time, the motivational aspects were slightly different, but luckily I had a lot more time anyway. So, you know, I didn't have any trouble necessarily, but, you know, it wasn't like every night I'd come home and I was like, okay, I've got to write this chapter, there's all these people waiting. It was more like, okay, you know, I've been thinking about this chapter today, let me have a go at it today, kind of thing. So it was definitely a different experience. I think writing with feedback is easier, but writing alone is better, perhaps.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm kind of curious that if you were in a parallel universe where the books weren't picked up for a traditional publishing deal, what would you have done with the series? Would you have put all of them onto Wattpad, or were you planning to self-publish? Or
yeah, I was. I mean, my dream has always been to be traditionally published. So when my book came out, the book had been read about 6.5 million times. So I had a big fan base, and I didn't want to let them down. But at the same time, I'm a full-time writer now. It's what I do for a living. So I have time to write. You know, if I hadn't been picked up by a traditional publisher and I hadn't, you know, been given a book advance to live off, you know, while I write book 2 and 3, etc., I don't know where I'd be, because I'd need to be starting a career in business. I'd probably be, you know, working in sales or marketing somewhere. And I don't think I have time to necessarily write the next couple of books as quickly. Mm. It would be a lot more piecemeal. But I would probably have self-published book 1 in a similar way to in that I did the traditional thing. I would have obviously published it a lot quicker. It took about a year from when I stopped writing on Wattpad to get the book out there, which was frustrating for me and fans, but that's just the way the publishing world works. It just takes a while. Mm. So that would have been different. And yeah, I probably would have continued writing the books, self-publishing them, and I probably would have hired an editor and done all the other things that self-published authors do. So yeah, I probably would have self-published it, but I wouldn't have been as focused as perhaps I am now.
See, I understand you did an internship at Penguin, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
I was wondering whether that experience has helped you as an author.
Yes, I'd say so. In fact, I've worked in every area of publishing other than the agenting world. So I worked at Penguin as an intern. There were 5,000 applicants for 4 roles, and I was straight out of university, and I applied and I worked really hard on this presentation, and I managed to snag one of them. I then presented to all the directors at Penguin about you know, the rise of the ebook and how they should be, you know, combating that, because they were losing, you know, it just wasn't good to have such a big focus on ebooks and Amazon having such a powerful kind of position and dictating terms and things like that. So that was one of my projects, and the other was looking at Penguin Classics and their kind of ebook platform and if they could be sold better perhaps. But so those two aspects definitely gave me a good overview of the market and how the industry works. I kind of got a sense of self-publishing versus traditional publishing, and I decided that traditional publishing was the way forward for me 100%. Self-publishing has its merits, but it just wasn't. I think that overall it's better to have a traditional publishing deal, at least when you're starting out.
Mm.
After that, I worked very briefly at a company called Blinkbox. So I got to look at and it was an ebook seller. Mm-hmm. So I got to look at how retailers work, and that was really interesting. I got to see how, you know, books are chosen to be featured, on how kind of processes work in the background, how some authors are kind of encouraged to give us like blog posts and stuff. So I ran their blog as well, and that was just really fascinating as well.
Mm.
But primarily, I'd say the main advantage for me when I was working at Penguin, like technically it was Penguin Random House, because I joined in the first day that Penguin and Random House merged.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there were lots of speeches and interesting things going on my first day, which was I was thrown in a bit of a deep end. I'd say the biggest advantage of working at a publisher is that I got to meet some authors. They weren't authors in you know, young adult or anything like that. They were mostly non-fiction, you know, cooking authors. I think I met Jojo Moyes, which is really cool. But for me, it was all about meeting an author and realizing that they're a real normal person. I kind of just pictured authors as these kind of mythical beings who, you know, they're these high-minded literary geniuses who you know, kind of hide away and you never see them, but actually they're just people like you and I. And I was like, well, actually maybe I have a chance at becoming an author. It's just something I'd always pictured as happening to other people. So I think that's what made me take the step of like, okay, I'm gonna write this book and I'm gonna have a go. And it's also where I heard about Wattpad, actually. Which was interesting. When I was looking at the market, I did a bit of research on Wattpad, but also my ex-boss at Penguin, because I told him I had another book that I'd been writing. It wasn't finished, and I'd started writing it when I was 15, so I don't know if it's publishable. But at the time, I thought it was. And he said, well, just put your stuff on Wattpad. There's loads of people who've been published from Wattpad. And I think it was perhaps his way of getting me to not pester him. I think he mentioned it when he came to my university and did a presentation about publishing, and he mentioned Wattpad then. And when I went to speak to him afterwards and mentioned I was a writer, he mentioned it in my interview, and he mentioned it several more times throughout my time at Penguin. So you know, he kind of encouraged me to put my stuff on there, but I don't think he actually thought that anything would come of it. So it was kind of interesting when I told him. It's just kind of interesting that it actually worked out.
That's really interesting. So you've kind of gone into the traditional publishing world, discovered Wattpad, went to Wattpad. Wattpad led you back to the traditional publishing world as an author.
Yes.
It's a very circuitous route.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, I don't consider Wattpad self-publishing necessarily for some reason. I kind of picture Amazon as self-publishing. And Wattpad as, I don't know.
I think it's its own thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's something which is very different as a model.
Yeah. It's like a great place to find beta readers, I'd say, but I wouldn't necessarily call it publishing.
No.
But then again, so many people have read it. I don't know. I guess it's a form of self-publishing, but I think when I think of self-publishing, I immediately think of Amazon and you know, CreateSpace and all that stuff.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. It's like an intersection between self-publishing and social media.
Yeah.
Which is, if it was a Venn diagram, it would sit in between the two, I think. Because, you know, like proper self-publishing, like you said, you know, you get an editor, you get a cover designer, you do it the best you possibly can, because otherwise what's the point? Whereas with Wattpad, it can be a lot more raw and you don't have to worry about getting it all completed and ready before it goes out there, as you have demonstrated yourself.
Yeah, it's more fun.
Very interesting times. You know, could anyone have predicted 10 years ago that anything like this would exist? I think they'd have a hard job.
Yeah. I mean, 10 years ago, Wattpad was around, but the technology wasn't there. It was, Wattpad flew me out after I got my publishing deal to meet the team and meet some of the other authors who started out on Wattpad, which was really good fun. In fact, I was the only boy. There are 15 authors flown out, and I was the only boy, which just shows that the demographics on Wattpad are skewed very female, which is just interesting.
Yeah,
I met the CEO Alan Lau, and he showed me a presentation of how Wattpad started, and it really started a long time ago. They originally had it as like, and they were trying to put books on Nokias for people to read as like a text, and it just wasn't working because the technology wasn't there yet. But they persevered.
Oh wow, I didn't realize that.
They're too focused on mobile. If they put it online. But it was all mobile and mobile focus. It was before apps even existed. They were trying to get it all started. So they're lucky that they stuck with it.
Yes, very much so. They were so massively ahead of their time. But
exactly. And I wish I'd had that when I was younger, because I loved writing, but none of my friends were into any of the stuff I was into. They didn't like science fiction. They didn't like reading. They didn't like writing. So it's literally just me. So since I've been published, I've met so many people who are into the same stuff as me. And it's just awesome now.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And so many of us have that similar experience of being the only one in our year or the only one in our entire school. I definitely had that experience of being the only person in a school of 1,500 kids who was really into sci-fi. And that's really depressing.
Yeah, it is. But I bet there's secret sci-fi fans who just, everyone keeps it to themselves.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. Maybe so. And they wouldn't come out, but I was, you know, walking around with my Star Trek badge just asking to be bullied. It was awesome. Oh,
I know the feeling.
So I wanted to ask you a question a little bit more frivolous now. If you were given a magic wand that could give you an unlimited supply of one thing, what would that one thing be?
I mean, if it could give me an unlimited supply of life and give me eternal life, that would be pretty good. I don't know if that's allowed.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. Because otherwise I would have probably said money and then tried to buy eternal life by, you know, investing a ton of money into life extension. I don't know. For me, it's all about eternal life. I'd probably quite like that.
I guess if you went down the money route, then you would have perhaps a scientific source of eternal life that you could then give to people that you loved.
Yes, that's true.
But it could be quite difficult if you came to regret that decision in
yes,
a thousand
that's
years.
True. That's true. Well, maybe it's like a finite resource and I have unlimited of it, but I can give it out in amounts. So you're like, here's 100 years.
Oh.
Don't piss me off at all.
Yeah, that's kind of scary. Can you imagine that? Yeah. Oh, that would be a very different world economy.
I think I'd become a crazy dictator, though, in that situation. That would be a bit weird. Yeah.
So flipping that on its head then, if you could be magically summoned by anybody, who would you most want to be summoned by and why?
That is tricky. I'm assuming I'd be at their beck and call and kind of be their servant. So it'd have to be someone really nice and someone who actually cares about me. So it'll probably be my girlfriend or my mother, I guess, because they tend to order me about sometimes anyway. So I might as well, they might as well just have that summoning ability. Nothing, not too much will change, because I'm quite happy with the way things are now. So yeah, that's probably how I do it.
So when people join me in the tea lair, I ask on the Twitters if anyone has any questions. And there was one question which I loved so much from our very own Den Patrick.
Oh yes, I saw author. That one.
He wants to know how your hair is always so immaculate. This is a very important question.
I guess I have a short back and side, so I only ever need to worry about the front. So I just put a bit of clay and then just sweep it aside and don't think about it too much. If you don't have much hair to play with, then it's easier to keep it in check, I guess.
Yes, yeah. But there is that critical tipping point where you don't have enough hair to play with and all of a sudden there's a whole different kind of problem.
Yes, that was that has happened to me. I was on my first month of university. My dad took me to his friend who he said used to be a hairdresser to Mariah Carey, and she's amazing and she's going to give you the best haircut ever and you're going to look great for your first month of uni. So I said, okay, yeah. And I said, yeah, short back and sides, long on the front. And it was just completely too short and I looked terrible my first month and I just made the worst first impression. And then when I grew out, people were like, oh, Taryn, you look so different. And it was because my hair just looked so much better. So, yeah, she never cut my hair again.
Have you found that you worry about your hair more now that you're a published author and you have to do public appearances?
Not really. I worry more about if what I'm wearing is appropriate and author-like enough. Because I'm quite young, but I want to give the impression of being a proper author. I mean, it happens when you're a young author. So I'm 24 years old. And I can sometimes look a bit younger as well if I've shaved recently, and they'll say, oh, what do you do for a living? And I'll say, oh, I'm a writer. And they'll kind of squint at you a little bit and try and work out whether you're a real writer, whether you just sit around at home and write blog posts and don't do anything and you just say you're a writer or whatever. So for me, it's, I always try and have this author persona, I guess. Yeah, I don't worry about my hair so much, but I spent a while thinking, look at all these big respected authors like Terry Pratchett and George R. R. Martin. They always have this hat. Everyone has a hat that they're known for. I was like, I need to find the right hat for me. What's the Taryn Matharu hat? But yeah, hats don't work for me. My head's actually really, really small and it just makes my head look tiny if I wear a hat. So no hat for me.
Oh, but you know, you could always find something else. I'm endlessly fascinated by the little kind of thing that each author adopts to kind of help with their public persona. So, you know, some of my friends have a particular jacket or waistcoats or, as you say, hats. You know, maybe you'll just have to settle on something else.
Yeah, I know Den wears black a lot and he has like a black scarf he wears sometimes, which is cool.
Yes, yes.
He looks very authorly. I know that elbow patches are quite alike. So I have a top with elbow patches, but I can't wear that all the time. Otherwise, I'd just look a bit nuts. So I have this leather jacket that someone gave me recently as a very belated birthday present. So I'm gonna have a trial with the leather jacket and see if it works.
I think if you go for the leather patches look, you have to go for the pipe as well. You have to do the whole look. Den Patrick is an author who I've always thought is one of those kind of effortlessly stylish people.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So, Summoner the Novice is out now, but there's also a free prequel.
Yes, there is. It's called Summoner Origins. As I said before, it took a year, maybe a little bit less, for the book to come out once it had been taken off Wattpad. So all the readers were waiting to read the rest of the book. And I felt very bad for them that, you know, they would have to wait a whole year. So I decided to write a prequel just for fun, just to keep them interested and keep them entertained while they waited for this book. And also as a thank you to them for all their support and encouragement and being so patient with me. I mean, when I told them, hey, guys, so I've been published and I'm afraid I can't put the book up for free. When that's happened before with other Wattpad authors, there's been a bit of backlash where people have been upset and think you're just in it for the money. But for me, from the start, I'd been telling people that I was trying to get it published and that was always my intention and that I wanted to become a full-time writer. So there was very little backlash for me. In fact, it was almost overwhelmingly positive. So it was my way of thanking them. So it's out now. It's completely free on Amazon and everywhere else. It's about 35,000 words long. And it's just it's a prequel novella which tells the story of one of the teachers at the academy, the Summoning Academy, Vokans, and how he came to become a teacher and how he came to become a summoner. And it's kind of interesting in that he's the first commoner to become a summoner, because it's that was actually something that used to be reserved for only the nobility, and they were thought to be the only people who had the ability to summon, and suddenly it manifests itself in this commoner, Arcturus. So it tells his story.
Excellent. The series, is that YA?
So it's middle grade crossover with YA.
Okay.
I have readers of all ages. I think the oldest reader that's ever got in touch with me is about 85 years old. So, you know, anyone can read it. I have a lot of adult fans. If I look at my Wattpad stats, a lot of them are over the age of 20. So it is YA, but it also is middle grade. Some reviews have said that it's just flat YA. Some have said it skews slightly younger. But it's the publishers have told me that it's 11 plus.
Right.
So it's kind of middle grade crossover with YA, I'd say.
I don't know if you wrote it with that age group in mind. But
no, I wrote it for myself. I mean, when I went in and sat down with them and they said, yeah, this is a middle grade book with YA tendencies. And then the other publisher said, yeah, this is YA, but with middle grade tendencies. Or, I mean, they all said it was a mix of both, because this is when the book went to auction. I had to meet various publishers and see what they said. But it was just interesting to me because I had literally written it for myself. I'd written it as a fantasy for myself, you know, and I started writing it when I was 22 years old. So I don't know. There's something about the book world that can be frustrating sometimes, where everything needs to be categorized. Everything needs to be, this is fantasy, this is science fiction, this is for this age group, this is for boys, this is for girls, this is for people of this background, this is for people of that background, this is for people with disabilities. I don't know. I think books should just be books, but it's easy, you know, you can identify them as something to make it easier to find them, I guess, but yeah, it can be tricky.
Yes. Yeah, it is strange when you suddenly realise that your book is being packaged into or slotted into a particular category when you've never had any kind of idea of that.
Yeah.
And it's a constant tension, I think, as well, because, I mean, certainly with my experience with the Split Worlds, I wrote the Split Worlds series and had no idea which category it could possibly fit in, because in my mind it spans several. And in some ways that can be an advantage, because when people read it as an urban fantasy, it's very different to a lot of urban fantasy that's out there. But then there are people who have preconceived ideas about urban fantasy who won't try it because they think it's the urban fantasy that they don't like, that everything else seems to be. And so it can work to your advantage or disadvantage as well. It's a very odd experience. When, of course, when you're writing it, you're just writing the story you want to write at the time. So I always like to ask my friends who come to tea, what would be the theme tune of their life? Not just because I'm curious, but also because those chickens over there are rather special chickens who are very good singers. So I was wondering what you would consider to be the theme tune of your life.
It's the song that I like to listen to the most when I'm going about my day-to-day stuff, and even when I'm just before writing. There's this song called Divenire by Ludovico Einaudi. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but he's a pianist, and he writes these beautiful, beautiful piano songs. And that's one of my favourites. And it's got a bit of orchestral stuff in it as well, violins and things. But it's just a brilliant song. Yeah. So I'd say that's probably my favourite.
Okie dokie. Let's see if the chickens know it. Little chickens, could you sing Divenire by Ludovico Einaudi? Hopefully, between our pronunciations, we've got somewhere close to the proper one.
Yeah.
For Taryn, please. And there they go. So there you go. I should think that sounds a little bit different from the version that you're familiar with.
That was beautiful. It really was.
Oh, you know, there are very few people who say that the chickens' renditions are beautiful. I'm sure that they will be your friend for life now.
Excellent.
So let me just check. Oh, I'm afraid the teapot is empty. So all that leaves me to say is thank you for joining me in the tea there today. It's been an absolute pleasure taking tea with you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You're quite welcome. Now, I understand that the car to take you back home is on the other side of the garden. So if you just take a shortcut through the garden that we've been looking out on, you'll be able to find the car in the road behind. At least that's what Latimer told me. So if you just follow Latimer through, he'll take you through into the garden.
Oh, thank you, Latimer.
Excellent. Well, do take care, and I'll hopefully be seeing you very soon.
All right. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
This way, sir. Is something the matter, ma'am? You're frowning.
I'm just making sure that he gets to the car safely. Hang on a moment. I'm sure there were only two gnomes over by the pond before. Now there are five. Latimer, come over here and have a look. Oh, hang on, there's over 20 now. I only took my eyes off them for a moment. Where are they all coming from?
There's no need to be distressed, ma'am. They're only garden ornaments.
Oh, hang on, there's a load of them over by the garden gate. It's like every time I look away, more appear.
Perhaps they're book lovers, ma'am. Keen for an autograph.
Well, that one over there looks evil. I don't like the way it's holding that fishing hook. Well, now there are at least 100 between Taran and the gate. He can't possibly reach it.
But it's not as if they're moving, ma'am. He's not in any peril.
That one's face has changed. He's got horrible sharp teeth.
But he's still not moving, ma'am.
And his eyes are glowing red.
Still not moving, though, ma'am. Glowing red eyes alone are hardly perilous.
They've just moved closer to him. Every time I blink, they've moved. Well, I must stop blinking. Oh, I blinked. Oh, this is impossible.
I've got an idea. Hey, stop right there, gnomes. Don't you know who I am? I'm your original creator, 16th century Swiss alchemist Paracelsus. I order you to stop this nonsense and go back to your gnome homes immediately.
Oh, they've gone. Well, they must have believed him.
Indeed, ma'am. Mr. Matheroo had the matter in hand all along. I would say that there was never a point where he seemed under threat.
Latimer, I think you and I have very different ideas about what constitutes a threat, or even normality for that matter. It isn't acceptable that my guest had to trick evil-looking ceramic garden ornaments into allowing him to leave. Somewhere along the line, this sort of thing became the norm, but for heaven's sake, Joe Abercrombie shouldn't have had to deal with that unicorn. Mary Robinette Coal shouldn't have had to think quickly to escape being eaten by giant birds. And if Pat Rothfuss hadn't had that cane, he would have been eaten to death in the Cretaceous period. And it's just not cricket. I remember taking tea with friends before you became my butler, and I'm certain nothing untoward happened. Except for that one time when I accidentally misread the amount of salt in that recipe for rock cakes.
It is very easy to mistake tablespoon for teaspoon when abbreviated, Mum.
Oh, stop trying to soften me up, Latimer. I'm in the middle of sacking you.
Mum!
I told you this would happen.
But who will bring you your cups of tea, Mum?
I'm perfectly capable of making my own tea.
But what about your morning tea? How will you rise without it?
Well, my husband will get that for me.
He got lost once in his own duvet. He can't even find his way out of the cellar.
Hold on a minute, have you put him in the cellar again?
Only in anticipation of the new Dragon Age DLC, ma'am.
Oh, that's it. Go.
But the tea things, ma'am. They must be packed.
No, I'll do it myself. Goodbye. Well, I'm so terribly sorry about that. Before I tidy up the tea things, I would like to raise my teacup to Scott Andrews, Catherine Fowler and Stephanie Gunn, the newest members of the Order of the Sacred Teacup. Should you wish to join the esteemed order and discover how Latimer became my butler, before it all went horribly wrong, go to www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy.
Goodbye then, ma'am.
Goodbye, Latimer.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Latimer.
Goodbye, ma'am.
Oh, just go. Oh, stop it, chickens. The end of the Incredible Hulk episodes always used to make me cry. Besides, I didn't think you even liked him. You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman and co-written with Peter Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find previous episodes and www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy to become a Bless Poppet. Ba 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 ba